always as a small business, getting by on the daily can seem overwhelming, let alone thinking about how we can reduce our carbon footprint as a business. I mean, small business owners don't have the budgets to throw at lessening their environmental impact like many of the big corporates do. And yet, I know that many of you, like myself, want to do more to help reduce our impact and leave a better future for our children and our children's children, or just for the future of the planet in general. So where do we start? Do we start with recycling, bike riding, reducing our consumption, or do we think wider and consider signing petitions or aligning ourselves with particular political parties? Whew. I mean, to be honest, it's pretty overwhelming. And yet there's no doubt that we do want to help. So, this week on the podcast, I spoke with Catherine Patterson, Head of Partnerships at Carbon Positive Australia. Carbon Positive Australia is all about planting trees to improve the biodiversity of Australia's native environment, while also offsetting the tons of carbon released into the atmosphere. And Catherine has some awesome advice on how you can get started in creating a better future for the world we live in today. So without further ado, let's dive in. Oh, hi, Catherine, and welcome to the Committed Creative Podcast. It's so great to have you with me today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to chatting.
Me too. So for those of us who don't know you or the business, perhaps you could start by telling us a little about it and what it is you do.
Yeah, I'd love to that. I'd just firstly like to acknowledge I'm talking to you from Wurjuknunga land here. So I work for a company called Carbon Positive Australia. I'm the head of partnerships here, partnerships and community. Carbon Positive Australia is an Australian charity. We've been around since 2001. And the main work that we do is we plant native trees and we restore degraded land back to native habitats. So all of the projects that we do sequester carbon, but some of our sites are listed carbon projects as well. The other side of our work is we provide lots of free education and educational tools such as our online carbon calculator to help individuals and businesses learn and take action on their ecological footprint.
Excellent. Brilliant. And how did you get into this line of work? Did you always want to work for a charity, or was it more that you're very passionate about the environment?
Probably the latter. Like, my background is accounting and business development. And I guess what started me on this path was I got into some conservation volunteering. And I love the outdoors. I've always loved the outdoors and trees. I'm a outdoorsy person. I love hiking and walking. So that kind of was my motivating passion. And I think also I got spurred on to do something about the environment when I was pregnant with my kids and Al Gore's The Inconvenient Truth came out, and carbon positive, I got a job here and I've loved it ever since.
And for those of us who weren't very good at science at school, like myself, maybe you could just take a moment to explain for those of us who are listening what exactly the natural carbon cycle is and why it's important for us to keep planting trees in order to help the earth.
Okay, ask me
a big question. Can you break it down for us?
So I guess a simplistic overview is it's nature's means of reusing and storing carbon from living and dead objects. So in the case of trees, through photosynthesis, they pull carbon dioxide or CO2 out of the atmosphere, and then they turn that into energy to grow. So when living things die, through composition, often over millions of years, they turn back into fuel for energy. So this is where we get our fossil fuels. So kind of where we are at the moment with the environment is that we've burned a lot of fossil fuels, which has resulted in too much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Because I guess on a natural cycle, it goes back into the earth to be reused as energy for, you know, tree growth and things like that. So I guess where we are with the environment and carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is we're traveling at around 400 parts per million. And ideally, we should be around 270 parts per million. That's sort of pre-industrial levels. And the other kicker about sort of carbon dioxide and the carbon, you know, what we're doing at the moment is carbon dioxide stays in the atmosphere for about 300 to 1,000 years. So even if we were to stop creating emissions today, we've still got to do something about the high levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And this is where trees come into it, because at the moment, they're one of the only mechanisms we actually have to draw down CO2 that's already in the atmosphere. So
Wow.
that's super important.
Yes, for sure. And you mentioned fossil fuels there. Do you think, or do you work with landowners who perhaps, have spaces where they're decommissioned mines and things like that to rejuvenate the land after they've been worked on?
No, we don't work in that space. I mean, there are a lot of a lot of work's been doing in that area of actually sort of working on the mine sites. But that's not where we plant. We tend to work with on degraded farmland that has become highly degraded. It can't be used for farmland anymore. So we've worked to restore that those type of habitats. We might also, I mean, it's still in the same case. We also work on some community sites in urban centres where there's been high amount of land clearing, which could be for development, and we help sort of do, small urban forests in those areas.
And when you plant the trees, do you often see that, wildlife come back as well, aside from,
We
the
do.
benefit of just the tree themselves with the atmosphere? But I'm thinking that, especially when you were talking about the farming land, I know that, when it's been grazed to death, often a lot of the wildlife disappears. So does that help the fauna as well as obviously you're helping the flora?
Yeah, look, planting native trees and shrubs is really, really important for our native animals and and also diversity of plants and species. At the moment, not only do we have an issue with global warming, but we've got an issue with high losses of biodiversity and losses of our ecological systems. So helping native plants and species thrive, doing native seed collection, helping them thrive is important to all the native fauna as well. We've got to create home and habitats because they are losing, they're losing their homes and habitats at a rapid rate.
Absolutely. And let's talk about how businesses can tie in with helping you with this, with helping plant trees. Because I know as a lot of small business owners listen to this podcast, and sometimes as small business owners, it can feel a little challenging to be able to help charities and support the environment. And I know, most of us are passionate about the environment and we want to help where we can, but, we don't have the funds of like the big corporates to throw money at, solutions. Are there things that small businesses can do to help?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We actually work with a lot of small businesses, that where they sort of realizing that land care and restoring habitat is really important to them. So they tend to work in a donation into their business model to help, specifically fund trees. So that's something that can be done, and that's totally a that's a donation basis. So there's nothing too big or too small that's important, and it directly goes into sequestering carbon, restoring habitats, and helping the biodiversity. So that's like one easy goal, if that's what, easy step you can take. The other ways that we often have these conversations with businesses, like, I really want to do something, but I'm really lacking resources, or I'm lacking time, and I don't know where to start. There's so much information out there, I just feel overwhelmed. So we do work quite hard to provide sort of free education and free actions. As we say to some people, it's just starting something. You can do a full carbon footprint. That's awesome. It really shows you what your drivers are. But if that's too time, consuming at the time, you can just pick off a part of your business and look at the carbon footprint of that, or look at how you can reduce it. I think it's just finding an action that you can commit to and just starting somewhere that's really important. No, don't feel it has to be perfect. Just, make a commitment, start that, and then move on to the next one, the following year when you've got resources.
And what are some small ways that businesses can reduce their carbon footprint? Like, say you're a small business owner, maybe you've just got a team of five and you're working from a little office, or perhaps you're even a home-based business. Are there some steps today that we could take to reduce our carbon footprint?
Yeah, and they are really simple and also could be cost effective. And it can be just sort of actually sort of creating education for your staff as well, like in terms of like small, we're a small team as well. But in our office, obviously what we've made a commitment is that we always turn off our screens to reduce energy. We think about transport and car usage, to site. So if we have to go out and do a project that we think about carpooling, and we have systems in place, to encourage us to sort of limit our transport use. I think that's the other thing I just want to say. It's really important is to set up systems so they're very easy to, create actions. We have recycling, it's brought up at our team meetings that these are our commitments. That we do recycle, that this is where you put things. So communication is really, really important as well. As well as having the facilities that you can put it in. Just as an example as well, here we've got a TerraCycle scheme, which is where people can recycle like Gillette shavers and Colgate toothbrushes, and then they give us money towards tree planting. So, you can start off something that doesn't actually cost, a recycling program that might help a charity, but it doesn't actually cost you anything. So that's another option. And another, I guess, we generally find transport, electricity usage. And the other thing that really drives up footprints of small businesses is it could be some of the materials that they use or they import in. So it's also good to have a conversation or seek out suppliers that maybe are also taking action as well. They're looking at their carbon footprint, or they might be helping helping an environmental cause.
I mean, just one brand that kind of springs to mind is that Who Gives a Crap toilet paper. That they, I don't know if you have an opinion on that brand, but that kind of, I feel like, that's one ethical kind of brand that you could maybe connect with, and use products that they're coming from businesses that believe in doing good to the earth, rather than
Yeah.
just always purchasing the cheapest product and not really thinking about the supply chain.
That's a really great point. And I think Who Gives a Crap have really done a great job of integrating the do good into their business model. It's just how it's completely integrated seamlessly, and that's part of what you're paying for. So it's a really great example. There's also, I guess, as I was saying, some of the actions that you take should hopefully reduce your costs as well, because being more sometimes efficient and reducing where you can should also help reduce your costs as well. So there's that other side of it as well.
Because I guess if you're reducing waste, then you're not spending needlessly or spending without thought, and then not using the equipment that you're purchasing or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, like Lego. I listened to an article with them as an example. Just reducing their box sizes has massive, has had impacts on their carbon footprint because it reduces the weight of when they're posting things. So, they've been quite innovative about, that, just making the boxes smaller.
Yeah, sometimes it's just a little bit of a thinking outside the box, excuse
Yeah.
the pun. So, make an impact. And obviously the business name is Carbon Positive Australia. What does it mean to become carbon positive?
Look, Carbon Positive was a name that we chose ourselves. I guess what we wanted to get people was to go beyond the notion of being carbon neutral and think about being nature positive and how they can make a difference in the world. And, the natural carbon cycle is an essential life cycle. So, we just wanted to get people thinking about that. So being carbon positive to us is like a number of action. It's helping restore degraded landscapes. It's eliminating your fossil fuel use, choosing renewables, supporting sustainable agriculture. I guess it could also be looking down your supply chain to make sure that they are doing things that's environmentally friendly. For instance, if you've got wood in your products, are you sourcing it from sustainable sources? So, it's a number of actions that are hopefully going to lead to a more sustainable world for our future generations, and in a world that they can prosper and flourish in.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned before that you work with a lot of small businesses. Is there like a common thread of why they come to you or why they're seeking out helping the planet? Do you find that a lot of the time it's the staff who are initiating the move, or do you think it's the company wanting to be seen to be more environmentally friendly, or do you think there's a common thread between your market?
No, not really. I feel like it's a mixture of all of the above. I think I'm just going to say here, I think, people get really concerned about greenwashing, quite rightly so. It is, we do want to step away from that and actually be, taking effective action and doing the right thing. But I th also think like greenwashing can also be a really great starting point, to taking actions and learning. And so long as you're learning and doing more, you might not have it, I guess what I'm saying, you might not have it right to begin with, but it's you've got to keep learning and you've got to keep progressing and doing more. But we have some businesses, as we said, that are just, right from the get-go are thinking about sustainability and also thinking how they can use their business for a vehicle for good, that's, part of their and how they can do things differently. And then there's other people, that, are literally are sort of going like, where do we start? We want to do something, or we might have pressure from, our customers, and we want to do something and we're not quite sure where to start. So, can we get help and advice? So it's really, really varied.
Yeah, you mentioned there briefly and also before about education, and I noticed that, Carbon Positive Australia does a lot around education in terms of your website. You've got a podcast. And how important do you think education is in running a business like yours? And not just in running Carbon Positive Australia, but how important do you think education is for the businesses that want to work with you in getting the message across to all their staff so that they're on board with, the mission to make the world a better place?
I think it's really important. And, on the calls that I have every day, I feel like people are quite overwhelmed. And so they really appreciate having sort of quite clear, concise information and clear pathways that they can follow. And also that, isn't influenced by anything. It's just, that it's sort of saying, you can do this or you can do that. And, because, as you said, not everyone has a resource that, a lot of small businesses or even bigger, they don't have the resources. So just anything that they can sort of learn and digest and take away, and then action is really, really important.
Yeah,
So I
so
don't know. I hope that answered your
yeah, no,
question.
I agree. And it's interesting. I went to this event recently called the Circular Economy, which I'm sure you know about the circular economy, but for those who don't, it's basically the idea of when you're using something, it has many more lives in terms of lifespan, I guess. So it's not, you're not just, fast fashion buying something and throwing away that item. You're thinking about where it's coming from, where it's going after you've used it, how you can recycle it and make the product last longer without just discarding it. Is that a good summary? I don't know. Do you have the
Yeah, no,
circular
it totally is.
economy?
It's as it is circular is, isn't it? Where the product keeps going into another lifespan. And yeah, that's very accurate how you said, that, we're very linear at the moment. You buy and then it used and then it goes away rather than those resources being used again and again and again.
And that sense of overwhelm did come up in the conversation at this event because I feel like a lot of people want to help, but they just don't really know what to do or how they can make small steps in their everyday lives to improve it. And one thing that I touched on with my friend is, before I had kids, I was so much better with my grocery shopping. I would make sure I bought things that were in limited plastic and that I wouldn't, that I would go to the market and select my fruit, not use a plastic bag, and use meat, buy meat from the butcher where, it was better packaged than in, those plastic containers that they come in, things like that. But after having kids, like I've found it just way, it's a too hard basket, and I've got limited hours in the day, and I need to just zip into the supermarket and buy things. And that, the guilt that I feel about that kind of falling to the wayside. And I know lots of people are busy in their lives. So Are there small steps we can take every day to kind of improve in small ways?
I think that is it. Just take small steps every day and also let go of, don't let guilt hold you back from like trying something, the next day as well. I think what you're describing, we all feel, including me who works in, I work in the environmental sector and quite often at home I get so busy with work, I don't always have time to take actions in my own personal life. And, I also want to let go of some of that guilt because often systems don't support our actions. There's not always an easy choice to make, that does. So I think, yes, there's lots and lots of easy actions. And it's just, rather than feeling guilty about not doing things, just find the one action that you find easy to take, build on it, get it into your routine and then keep building on it. And I guess, as I said, it's personal actions are super, super important, but we can also do things on a larger scale that support systematic change. So I don't think we should, as well as, we might also think about recycling or reduce waste. That can be your action could be is actually supporting people, campaigns or that are trying to get rid of waste. I helped with Ban the Plastic Bag. It can be things like moving your superannuation into an ethical fund that doesn't invest in fossil fuels. It could be, aligning yourself to political parties that want to see environmental change. So, as I said, it's also helping the systemic changes rather than getting too weighed down with guilt about any personal action that you're not taking. As I sort of said, planting trees, you might not be able to actually do little things yourself, but then you're helping landscapes, restore as, so it's just, there's always little things you can do and they do make a difference.
So true. And yes, you're right about the guilt. I need to let go of that. Actually, one thing that I found environmentally that I feel is easier to implement into my life is I watched this documentary about fast fashion probably like 5 years ago now. I can't even remember what it was called, but it really hit home with me. And I was like, oh, like I hadn't really thought about where my clothes were coming from up until then. And so since then, I've just been really into my op shopping and pretty much I've never bought anything that wasn't from an op shop since then. And my kids included, they all wear everything, and my husband from the op shop. And you can find so many amazing things in the op shop. And I feel like that's often a place people overlook. And yeah, just thought I would put that in there. I found like that was something like especially things like with my daughters at school, they've got to dress up for in a certain theme or something, rather than going to Kmart and buying a red shirt. Just going to the op shop and buying a red shirt for like $2, and at least you're recycling that red shirt that someone else has probably bought for their school sports day or whatever, and you get to use it again, and then you can re-donate it afterwards as well. So I guess that can play a role, and that's just one
Well,
way.
yeah, I mean, it's double good. You're helping another cause and you are recycling. But I think at the heart of that question, there is an issue about our consumption that we all need to think about. Sometimes it's not always getting alternatives, it is actually just reducing consumption. I read a really interesting article with Jane Goodall, and she brought that, we just, we all think we may be bred to think we need a lot of things. And I think when you start, having a bit of a break from that, you realize you don't need it and you save a lot of money. That's
Oh,
helpful.
it's so true. We traveled the world for many years and also traveled in a caravan for 18 months. And we've never been happier with such few things. All we had was what was in our backpacks or in the caravan, and you realize you really don't need stuff. You really just don't need the stuff. And in fact, having less stuff is less stressful, I find. And, society makes us think that we've got to keep up with the Kardashians, And you just don't need that crap in your life.
No.
Unfortunately, just that consumerist mentality is, rife in society. And I feel like it needs to, we need to make a fundamental shift in our mindset in order to change the way we consume. Yeah, that's just
Yeah, I think that's true. But I
I
was
don't
going to
know
say at the
how.
moment.
I don't know how. It's a big question of how we could educate more around that. And the thing is, businesses want to sell things, so I don't know how that could be. That message of you always must have the latest iPhone or fancy furniture in your house is going to be dimmed, but yeah, some big
Yeah,
questions.
no, I mean that's definitely a bit more of a philosophical question, isn't it? About, how you might want to live your life. But and I guess what's also, as you sort of said about the circular economy, that is, hopefully where that can start playing in and also help the economic growth that we want, while repurposing projects, repurposing items for a longer life.
And even with businesses, one thing that I think many probably don't think about, because I certainly didn't up until this event the other week, was office furniture. So many offices fit out their office with brand new furniture and a lot of equipment, and then 6 years down the line they move location or whatever it might be, and a lot of that furniture just ends up in landfill. And there was a company at this event that I went to where they take that furniture and donate it to charities, but they just said the amount of stuff that's really good quality that they're willing to give to the tip because, they no longer see a need for it. And I think that's something as a small business you can consider. I mean, the desk I'm using today, I got off Marketplace, and I feel like small things like that could also help when, we're thinking about not just clothes or food, but even just everything we have in our home, to think about how we could buy it secondhand.
I think that's a really great, for some businesses, well, we've done it ourselves, I mean, it saves you money, which
Yeah,
we obviously want to
absolutely.
do. And yeah, even in your business, isn't it, particularly if you're running a small business, about, what the change that you want to see and how you're going to be part of that. Yeah. And there's always other options.
So true.
So,
Sorry.
and also, you do want, we also kind of want systems that help support people to make the choice on recycled furniture or have options, that makes it easier to buy it, recycle it. That's really important as well.
I think it just needs to be easier for people, or even just the awareness, because I feel like shopping on Marketplace is relatively easy, but sometimes people just don't consider think about it because they don't have that awareness. So maybe it's about improving campaigns as well around consumption. But anyway, that's a whole nother topic, I suppose. So how do Carbon Positive Australia get funding? So who supports you? Is it mainly small businesses? Is it larger organizations?
It's all of you, no, it's all of them. Individuals. We have obviously a lot of support from individuals, small businesses, and larger businesses. So whether you offset with us, donate, or choose to like plant a tree, fund the planting of a tree, it helps us restore land and plant more trees. It all goes into that sort of fund. So, so we are, as I say, completely, I say, funded by donations in that some of them, we call them donations because that could also be people who choose to offset with us as well.
So what's choosing to offset? What does that mean?
So, as I mentioned on the beginning of our chat, our projects, or we plant trees and we do land restoration, and some of our projects are listed carbon projects, which means they're listed on the Australian Emissions Reduction Fund. And we follow a methodology, so they're a carbon project. So we follow a methodology to measure the carbon, and that means that we can sell it to people, people or businesses that want to offset their own emissions. By investing in a project that lowers or sequesters carbon from the atmosphere.
Oh, wow. So basically, they pay you some money to invest in a project that's helping the environment to offset the carbon they're putting into the environment.
Yes, that's right. I mean, that's what a carbon offset projects are, because there's been quite a bit of discussion and bad press about carbon offset projects. But I guess what's important to remember is so a carbon offset or credit is derived from a project that either lowers or stops emissions going into the atmosphere. So when you create emissions, you can choose to balance it out by buying an offset. There are lots of different project methodologies. So a renewables could be a project methodology, or a tree planting project. So there's lots of different methodologies, and some are, I guess, sort of have more environmental benefits than others. And obviously, when you offset. So when you create emissions, you should work to reduce them and then offset the ones that you cannot reduce any further. And that's what they call being carbon neutral.
And how much does it cost to plant a tree? Is there like a standard price, or does it vary depending on the tree species and the location?
It varies depending on the where you're planting and the species. So I guess what people aren't aware of, it's not, because you can go to Bunnings and you can plant a tree, you know, you can get a load of tube stock for, I don't know, I think I haven't been there for a while, for, you know, a few cents or so. But planting a tree, yeah, it does, you're paying for the whole project cost, you know, so you're looking at the site preparation. In our case as well, we would be doing seed collection from the remnant bush because we want to plant what's endemic to the area. And then from that seed collection, we have to take them to nursery so they can germinate. So we've got seedlings to plant. And then we actually go in and plant. And then once the trees are planting, we've also got to then monitor them and see how they're going. Because unfortunately, also we're finding we are getting variations in rainfall or changing conditions because of climate change. So, you know, sometimes we have to work on different mixes, and also, you know, sometimes our sites need intervention because we haven't had the rainfall that we've been anticipating. So the cost of the tree, we charge $4, but, you know, just to make it simple for people, other people might charge other amounts, like other charities, but there can be lots of variances depending on the project.
And so do you normally plant lots of trees in a particular place at any one time? Is that how it works?
Yeah, we do. Most of like on our degraded land restoration, the project cycle is about a year, you know, but the time we go and plant, the site can be planted over a couple of days, but the actual prep and doing the seed collection, you know, can go on for about a year. So, but yeah, it's all done in one big hit. And then it's monitored sort of 3 months after that. So they're going 6 months, and then we sort of, you know, see how they're going and if we need to be doing anything else.
Wow. And are there particular areas in Australia that you're focusing on at all?
We focus particularly on WA because that's where the core of the team are. And also, as some people may be aware, you know, some areas of the Australian wheat belt is over 90% cleared of native bush and vegetation. So we do, you know, we tend to work in those areas. We know them really well. We also have some projects over in northern New South Wales. And what we're also doing at the moment, we're rolling out a national program called Plant Trees Australia, where we're helping fund smaller community plantings in urban areas. So there are up on that site already. There's, you know, there's projects all over the country. So that's exciting.
Cool. So would that be working with local councils to plant trees in parks?
In some cases, so it can be any land care group. So any land care group can go and list a project on there and see if they can get volunteers. And also, we also help fund some specific projects that we've vetted. So we're doing Miyawaki forests in schools. So they are small pocket forests that grow really, really quick, native pocket forests that grow really, really quickly because of the way they've been planted. And we're planting those in schools, quite often in like disinvested areas. I think I mentioned earlier that, you know, where land clearing has been quite extensive, they don't have maybe sort of affluent councils, you know, so they don't, you know, they wouldn't necessarily get a lot of tree planting done otherwise.
Yeah. And you mentioned the wheat belt as being one of the worst, that's probably not the right word, but one of the most devastated areas in terms of clearing of native bush. What else happens to the land when there's no trees and it's all being cleared? Like, does it damage the soil? Does it affect the weather conditions? Like, I'm just thinking about the sun, there's no shade. Like, does it have other side effects for the area?
Yes, it does. I mean, if you sort of look it up, there is a picture on the internet which shows a rain cloud over a group of trees in the wheat belt. So obviously having trees, having green does actually help helps the water cycle. And the other thing is it degrades our soil. We've got a huge problem here in Australia with salination. You know, our soil's becoming so degraded and highly salted, you know, that you can't do anything with them. And, you know, having native vegetation helps remedy that problem. And so once soils become very, you know, degrading, so they don't absorb water, they, you know, it just runs off. So having native vegetation and trees is, you know, both important for our water cycle and our soil.
And so not absorbing water, would that contribute to flooding, especially like what we've seen over east in the last few years?
Yeah, in some cases. I feel like it's like beyond some of my
more of a scientific
question. Running off is not great. Yes, it would sort of help contribute.
So if someone's listening to the podcast right now and they want to do something to help, what could be some next steps to get in contact with Carbon Positive Australia, or what could they do today to sort of make the move into helping us strive for a better planet?
They could get involved in tree planting, which obviously is my passion.
of course, how should they do it?
Yeah, no, we've just launched our Plant Trees Australia, which is where you can go and register for volunteering for local planting in your area. That has its own website called Plant Trees Australia. If they come and visit our website, Carbon Positive Australia, it could be a really great start to their journey about learning about their carbon footprint, or learning about land restoration and tree planting and the benefits it can give. Anyone who makes, you know, as I said, if you want to get involved and help actually fund the planting, no donation, large or small, is wasted. You know, we're a small crew. It helps us out. You know, we're really, really passionate, and we're a small team, and we've done some amazing projects over the last few years. So, you know, we welcome people on board. If people want to look us up, we're on all social channels apart from TikTok, and Insta, Facebook, and LinkedIn. We also run a podcast called Practical Changemakers. So if you are sort of wanting to learn a little bit more about actions and land restorations, you could check out that podcast too.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time, Catherine. Really appreciated our chat. And I learned a lot about tree planting, which is great. So I think I might go and have a look. Actually, that's one question. If someone does make a donation or are supporting a project of yours, is there like an accreditation they could use on their website to show that they're supporting you?
Yeah, it's not really an accreditation because we're a charity, not an accreditation
body. Oh, yeah, that's probably
body, the wrong word. But we do provide certificates and project monitoring reports and updates, which we let that people can share, you know, on the projects that they're supporting. So we provide, you know, a number of assets, and obviously we want people to get involved in the project. So we love sharing news and, you know, what's going on at sites with them.
That's awesome, because I feel like sometimes, you know, you donate money to a charity and you don't really see where it's gone. So that transparency is awesome. And if, you know, people love to buy from people who are supporting good causes. So if businesses can share with their clients what they're doing with you or with other tree planting charities, I think that would be really beneficial.
Yeah, so thank you. And so we love it as well, because obviously, you know, our partners, we've been working with some partners for like over 20 years. So, you know, it's really important to us. It's what enables us to do the work. So yeah, we, you know, we love sharing the story, and, you know, we want people to get involved. And here in WA, you can probably go and visit some of the sites as well.
That's true, actually. Didn't think of that. Is there like a map on your website where people can check out where you've planted?
We have, I think it's a Google map. I mean, the degraded sites, which we often run into, you know, they are in quite remote areas. You know, we have brought donors and businesses out there, but they are fairly remote and they don't tend to have great facilities. But yeah, there is a map, and yeah, so it'd be great. Go and check it out.
Excellent. Well done for making such a great impact on our environment. It's great to speak to inspiring organisations like Carbon Positive Australia. Thanks so much, Catherine.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to chat about our projects, Carmen.
Thank you for listening to the Committed Creative podcast. I would be ever so appreciative if you could head on over and subscribe to the pod or leave me a review. Or if you're so inclined, head on over to my website, redplatypuscreative.com, and send me an email with some feedback. I'm all ears. Until next time, here's to going all in on your creative pursuits.